Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Becky from Philadelphia.
I'm a little shorter. Is that good? Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Becky. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Becky.
This is so surreal. Thank you for having me. The first time I was ever here, I was like 4 days sober. And I came up with a speaker who was, you know, crazy enough to take me on. And I sat out there looking at all you people. First off, the place grows as it gets darker, and you don't really realize how many people are here until we all pray at the end. And I was just overwhelmed that, like, this many people weren't feeling as broken and crazy as I knew I felt. You know, and that's kind of my story, you know. I've tried to get sober longer than I drank before I got here. And I spent so much time in meetings like this, listening to people up here and being surrounded by you happy, wonderful people, thinking like if I could just figure out what you guys had going on, maybe I would quit wanting to jump off bridges and drink more than I wanted to breathe. But it just seemed like there was 8 million miles between you and I. And it was like that gap that just for decades, I really had I couldn't figure it out. Probably because I didn't realize it until I got broken enough to listen and willing enough to take some actions that I realized that I came to find out that there was nothing I needed to figure out. This hasn't ever been about what I know or don't know. It's always for me been about what I do and what actions I'm willing to take. So anyway, there's my little spiel, but thank you for having me back. It's a lot scary. Actually, no, it was scarier out there at day four, but it's still kind of intimidating up here. I am an alcoholic. I have a sobriety date. It is August 31st of 2015. So, you know, God willing and the creek don't rise and all that, I'll be having 2 years in a couple of days, which is nothing short of a miracle. And I have a home group. It is the Kitchen Table Group. We meet in South Philadelphia on Monday and Wednesday nights. On Monday nights, we serve food at 6:30. We put on a really good spread. We feed easily up to and over a good 100 plates of food per week. We hope the chef stays sober because he does a really nice job. So if you guys are ever in South Philadelphia on a Monday night, come early and come hungry because we'd love to feed you. And that night is followed by a line-by-line big book study. And then on Wednesday nights, we have a speaker meeting that starts at 8 that's very similar to this, except we have a 10-minute opener followed by our main speaker. And I love my home group. And what I found there is a group of people that ought to be dead that are really excited that they're not. And they're really happy to help the next guy figure out see how they're not dying too. You know, and that's really just what it's about. You know, for all intents and purposes, I should have been dead a long, long time ago. And when I first got here and my sponsor pushed me at that first new person, it scared the hell out of me because I was absolutely certain I'd kill them, you know, and that I had to, you know, I got the power, right? You know, I'm going to kill these people. And I just, you know, so much of that was just going on the promise that someday this will make sense to you, but just do this thing, you know, and from that, you know, this thing has grown up and in me. And I have a sponsor and she knows she's my sponsor. You know, I try to stay reasonably accountable, and on any given day, sometimes I fail miserably, and sometimes, you know, she's really aware of my comings and goings, you know, and I texted her right before I got here, and it was funny because one of the last things I said to her was, it feels kind of odd, like, speaking today, because I had a crappy day, you know, I did, like, work was stressful, and I had some stuff going on, you know, family-wise, and I was just kind of feeling overwhelmed by today. So the idea of coming here tonight when I want you guys to like me, and I want to sound good, and I want to seem super sober, you know, and I want you guys to think I floated in here, and I'm going to float out of here, because I'm not going to lie, what you think still really matters to me, you know, in general, as a defect of character. Like, the idea of, oh, like, I was just like, oh, my God, not just like, oh, I don't want to do it, but, you know, what am I going to say? But this amazing thing happens to me most nights when I'm invited to do this sort of thing, and right around when you start reading the steps, like I forget my last name and where I was born and what I was about, because that kind of like fear or whatever, I like to think it's God shaking out my ideas, you know, and just like using me for whatever he wants me to say tonight. So I have a sponsor, and I sponsor women, which absolutely blows my mind that anybody would see me on any given day and say, hey, I want what you got. Oh, my God. You know, like, it's just crazy. Like, there is a God, because people see, you know, like, and he does not need my permission. But so that's a little bit about me. And you know, get the nervousness out by giving you my AA resume, so to speak. But, you know, I suffered from alcoholism for a long time. You know, like it says in our third tradition, the long form doesn't say that, you know, anyone, it's not about having a desire to stop drinking. It's supposed to be open for anyone that suffers, you know, and I suffered from alcoholism for years before I had a desire to stop drinking. You know, I had a desire to stop getting in trouble. I had a desire to stop facing the consequences and paying the prices that I was paying, because you know, that kind of sucked. But, you know, I absolutely love the relief produced by alcohol, and I would really, really like for you to not take my drink, you know, but if you could, you know, figure out how to just have the pain stop, you know, and if I could just figure out how to quit, like, having to, like, see that look in my daughter's face ever again when I screwed up one more time, you know, and not to mention, you know, jails and you know, impending this and impending that, and you know, homelessness and loss of license and all that stuff, you know, but it didn't start out that way. You know, I didn't drink a handle of vodka the first time I ever took a drink. You know, I came from kind of a crazy family that I used to think was the root of all my troubles, and if you had them, you'd drink too. But the truth is I grew up, you know, in a small town with a small family and an older sister, and we kind of ran around really unsupervised, and I discovered drinking, I guess, at a young age. I thought I was way overdue, quite frankly, when I found it. You know, especially when I got the relief produced by alcohol, I wish I'd started it in kindergarten. You know, it fixed me so well. Drinking fixed parts of me that I didn't know were broken before I took a drink. You know, I couldn't articulate what was wrong with me. I was just kind of a shy, scared, awkward kid that didn't know what the heck was going on, you know, and I always felt disconnected and out of place, even when places when I shouldn't, you know, like amongst a group of friends or even amongst my family or wherever, put me in any situation where I should blend, I just felt like I didn't, and I'm this scared, shy, kind of quiet kid and awkward, and so I tended to be drawn towards solitary of, you know, stuff like isolated things where I didn't really have to interact with you because that was hard. So like I played with dolls like way longer than it was cool, and I read a lot and I got good grades, and I was just kind of my sister's little shadow, you know, and I just kind of like would bounce around and follow her around, and it, for my parents, that kind of killed two birds with one stone. You know, they you know, it was her job to kind of keep me out of trouble, or it was my job to keep her out of trouble because she had me in tow, and it was her job to get me home at night, you know, and kind of like be a second parent type deal, but I didn't really slow her down much, so as a rule, I kind of in general, like, was probably exposed to stuff and saw a lot of stuff that no little kid should see, both in and outside of my home at a very young age. And in addition to this, you know, immense, intense, paralyzing fear of people in every form, I had a healthy fear of drugs and alcohol from a very young age, because you didn't have to be a rocket scientist to look around and see the havoc it was wreaking in my own home, you know, and I was absolutely terrified and very judgmental about drinkers in my life, you know, like I was the dare kid, I really was, you know, like, and you know, I had the t-shirt and everything, and I'd tell you the little, you know, I was groomed to be ACOA from an early age, you know, And but then this thing happened, because like I said, in addition to this healthy fear of drugs and alcohol, I also had an absolute terror about, like, what do you think of me, you know, and wanting to be liked, you know, and I was at a party at my sister's house, or it was my house, but it was my sister's party, and somebody offered me a drink, you know, and my first real, first time I ever felt the effects produced by alcohol, it was like a 2-liter bottle of Bartles and James wine cooler, you know, it was really hardcore sexy stuff, and, you know, I drank it down and looked for more. And the thing about that night, you know, like I said, I didn't know what I suffered from until booze fixed it. You know, I didn't realize that I'd been walking around my whole life like a clenched fist. You know, I didn't know that, like, I'd never really taken a full deep breath until alcohol let the wind out of my lungs, you know? And it was like for the first time in my life I could breathe. It was like for the first time in my life, you know, prior to that and sober, I'm the kind of person that, like, is scared to order a pizza, you know, because what is the guy on the other end of the phone going to think? You know, I rehearse my order so that I don't sound stupid, you know. And you know, after I start drinking, like, not only can I order pizzas, which is helpful, but it's not just that I can talk to you. It's that I'm suddenly convinced and absolutely certain that you really want to talk to me. You know, like, I'd always been the center of my own universe, but booze allowed me to also be the center of yours, you know, and it's just kind of like the entire world shifted on its axis in that moment, you know, and it fixed every problem, everything that was wrong with me. You know, I got funnier and I got prettier and I got smarter and I got braver, you know, and I got all these things that it fixed me, which is great, because quite frankly, I needed fixing. Like, if it hadn't been for alcohol, if it hadn't been for drinking, I probably would have blown my brains out at the, you know, 17. Like, I was absolutely, completely, and totally terrified and so uncomfortable in my own skin and so uncomfortable in my life and just absolutely broken long before I ever drank. So it probably saved my life until it almost took it, you know, and that was kind of the problem. That's the problem. You know, it fixes me until it doesn't. You know, it makes things easier until it makes them worse. And but you can't give me that kind of relief, and you can't give me that kind of answer, and then take it away. You can't, like, it was that kind of answer, and the thing that booze did for me, I'll pay any price for it. You know, in 1980, whatever, when I took that first drink, you know, nobody ever said to me, you know, they didn't say to me, but even if they had, I wouldn't have believed them or it wouldn't have mattered. You know, no one said, like, do you want this? You're going to pay for this with, you know, the love and respect of your future children, every job, every relationship you've ever had, every car, every this, your, you know, your record, your freedom, your blood, whatever, you know, ad infinitum, you know, but, you know, I paid those prices willingly. You know, I'm from New Jersey. I grew up most of the time by the Jersey Shore, and Child Protective Services out there is called DIFAS. You know, like DIFAS didn't take my kids. I gave them away. You know, and I tell you, I loved them, and I did. I do. You know, and I'd run anybody over that got between me and them, but I ran them over daily for the, you know, chasing a drink, and that was just my story. But like I said, it didn't start out that way. Drinking was fun for a lot of years. It fixed what was broken in me. You know, and at an early age, it didn't look that different than the drinking everybody else around me was doing. You know, maybe it was who I was picking, but, you know, I kind of ran with people that drank like I drank, and it was fun, and it started out with, you know, like drinking in the woods on the weekend, and like I said, I grew up on the beach, and you're drinking on the dunes and hanging out, and I lived on an island town, and it was a population of like 2 in the wintertime, And my sister was, like I said, she's a couple years older than me, and it was way before they computerized, like DMV and whatnot, so I had a fake ID at a very young age, and I'd walk into these bars, you know, in January, and throw my ID up on the bar, and I looked 12 when I was 30, and they'd look at it and be like, she was here 2 hours ago, like, go home, you know, like, I kept trying, you know, and I'd get, like, thrown out of every bar, and except, like, the airport, so I drank at the airport, you know, like, that's okay, whatever, you know, and at a very early age, and throughout the course of my drinking, like, alcohol started making all my decisions for me. You know, I didn't know it at the time, but, you know, prior to my drinking career really taking off, like I said, that scared quiet kid that needed you to like her and needed approval. You know, I always got those straight A's and I got those grades just because I didn't know not to. And from the time I started drinking, like, if you could get me to school 4 days in a row, it was a miracle. And I never got another grade. And I never showed up. And I graduated by the skin of my teeth because I figured out if I got pregnant, they'd push me through. You know, and that's what I did. And I was absolutely certain that, like, you know, having these kids would fix me, you know. And prior to all that, and you know, I was getting invitations to Ivy League schools and advanced summer programs and all this kind of stuff. And I barely graduated, you know. And I used my scholarship money, you know, to pay my rent because I was spending my money on other things. And it suddenly occurred to me that instead of, like, working so hard, you know, that I can just marry that guy and have the family I always wanted and I don't have to try so hard and I can just make this life. You know, I immediately started changing my ideas based on the way I was running. You know, and which is why, like, kind of the idea of a bottom never really settled well for me. My experience is this idea of hitting bottom. It's just a new level of hell that I haven't become accustomed to yet. Because the thing that I'm absolutely certain on Tuesday is going to be the end of me. And that slimy thing that I can't look myself in the mirror over, and I hope you never find out. Whatever it is on Tuesday, on Thursday is just what I got to do and I'm accustomed to. You know, and that's just how that rolled for me. You know, and I'm all about minimal effort, maximum reward. You know, I want it whatever's easiest without having to try very hard because I'm also lazy inherently. And so instead of, like, going off and going to college and doing these things, I'll just marry this poor slob and have a bunch of babies and let him take care of me. Because then it's your problem and not mine, you know. And that I learned, you know, it's funny. From the day I started drinking, the idea that we talk about of, you know, the phenomenon of craving, where once I have one, I can't stop, I knew that from the age of 14. You know, once I start drinking, I've got to clear my calendar because I'm probably not going to show up for whatever I intended on doing. I thought that that's just what happens when you, like, I didn't know that made me special. You know, I just thought that that's what drinking does, you know. And so that I understood from a very young age. Like, it was like, you know, and what I also learned early is I just need a babysitter. You know, so it quickly became whoever I was running with's job to make sure I make it home. And some people were better at that than others, you know. And so in addition to, like, burning through what, you know, I immediately started burning through people that way because it's a lot of pressure, you know, to make sure I behave. So that's how I'm running. And so I decided to marry the guy and he'll take care of me instead of, you know, doing anything else. And I'm absolutely certain that these babies that I start having are going to turn things around for me, you know, because I wanted more for them than I had. And I still, of course, think that everything that's wrong in my life is my parents' fault and that I'm going to kind of reinvent myself as this, you know, super mom. And it's this kind of stuff where I absolutely know that there was no alcoholism prevention for me. You know, that I was just this, like, pile of dry kindling waiting for you to light on fire. You know, because I'm like that freight train, you know, that I just can't stop until something stops me. And that was true in 1992, as true as it was 2 years ago. The only thing that has changed is when my progression is the consequences that I pay and the things I'm willing to give up. Because all that stuff that started being fun became a necessity really, really early. And I thought that, like, you know, I would just always try to put off that first drink for as long as possible. Because, like I said, I know that once I start, I'm screwed. So I just try to delay that first one. And I think I was 15 the first time I ever said I'm never going to drink again. Because I didn't have to look very far than my own house to kind of see where I was headed. You know, like, I mean, there's plenty of warning signs floating around. And also, I was starting to pay prices of my own. You know, like, I was winding up in places where no young teenage girl should be with people that I had no business running around. And I was putting myself in some dangerous situations and paid some really scary prices for that. And it even as deluded as I was, it didn't take much for me to realize that if I hadn't been drinking and chasing the drink, I wouldn't have wound up putting myself in that position. So I should never, ever, ever drink again. And I'm never gonna. But I can't not. You know, and when it's funny because years, you know, decades later, when I wind up in Alcoholics Anonymous and you guys are talking about this mental obsession, in my mind, it was like, you know, Days of Wine and Roses when he's fighting it, you know, and for me, there was never any fight, you know, like the mental obsession that we talk about in here, for me, it usually just looks like I changed my mind. You know, like everything that happened to me on Tuesday that made me say I'm never going to drink again, like I said before, you know, whether it was like, you know, DWIs or wrecking cars or wrecking lives or whatever I was doing on Tuesday that I'm never going to drink again, by Wednesday afternoon or Thursday or next week or next month or whatever, it just feels like I was being dramatic. You know, like, you're just so dramatic. Like, this, don't be so, that this is a big deal. You know, like I talk myself into this oversell, you know, and like, you know, when I got the DWI, like, you know, it was awful and it was embarrassing and it was humiliating. My whole family was there and it was right before Thanksgiving. So I'm, you know, passing this stuff in with, like, you know, handcuff bruises on my wrists and everybody knew about it. And that's going to keep me sober because I'm humiliated. And then, like, you know, a couple days later, I'm like, well, it wasn't the front page of the paper. It was, like, page 6, you know? And I wasn't the first part of the police log. It was, like, towards the end. People will be bored before they get to me. And I have a really common last name. It could have been anyone, you know? And I just talked myself out of that, you know? And I write your gratitude list because I started, you know, don't get me started. You know, but I hang on to these things that are, I'm so grateful I got kids and I got this and I got that and all that stuff that I'm so grateful for on Tuesday. Tuesday's a big day for me. You know, I'm always grateful on Tuesday. By the time Wednesday rolls around, like, you know, the kids are, they want to go places and you just won't stop chewing and that, you know, just, and the way you chew your food and you won't stop talking, and I just want to rip your face off or rip mine off, and I just can't stand it. And the boss, the job, I'm so grateful that I still have because I shouldn't. You know, they should have fired me ages ago, thank God, you know, for unions and state employees and things, but, you know, benefits. But, like, that job, I was so grateful that I managed to hang on to, you know, by that Tuesday afternoon. You know, my boss doesn't appreciate me, and it's stupid, and I hate it, and it's just ridiculous, and I'm unappreciated, and I should have gotten promoted ages ago, and, you know, a one-armed monkey could do this job, and blah, 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 and next thing I know, I should stop and get a drink, you know, and it just, it starts this whole thing all over again, you know, and one of the benefits of the main, you know, a huge benefit of my experience, it's like in the Ninth Step Promises, where it says, no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we can see how our experience can benefit others. It implies there's a scale there, you know? And I kind of believe what the book says. And no matter how far down the scale you have gone, I guarantee you I can meet you where you are. Because when I first came here in 1980, whatever, and you told me that I was dying from a fatal progressive illness, I didn't believe you. I just didn't believe you. I was trying to save a marriage and shut you up, you know? And whoever you were, because there were a lot of you, and just shut up. And you know, by 2 years, you know, fast forward to 2 years ago, you tell me I have a fatal progressive illness that's going to kill me, and I say, when? Sign me up for that. Like, I'm not afraid of heaven, but this living thing really sucks. You know, I'll check the box. Okay, I'm good, you know, and but I've got these kids and they're older and now they're like adults and kids and I've got people, I'm surrounded by people that I'm trying to stay alive for because I don't want them to feel like, I've got like this idea that it'll like somehow stigmatize them to have like, you know, a mom that dies of some kind of suicide or overdose. And so I'm praying for brain tumors. You know, I want a nice guilt-free brain tumor to take me out. You know, because then, you know, there's guilt-free and I'm real good at guilt-free, you know. And please don't ever hold me accountable for any of my actions. You know, I have brain tumors or no guilt. And I'm saying when. You know, and my alcoholism didn't change in 20-some-odd years of trying to stay sober and failing. But my consequences sure did and the prices that I paid. You know, to the point that by the time that I crawled back into your rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous a couple years ago, you know, I'd reached a point where I was couch surfing but ran out of couches to avoid being homeless. You know, I destroyed every relationship I'd ever had in my life. My youngest daughter, who was always my biggest cheerleader, when I would cry sober, because that's what I do. When the heat's on, I cry sober. You know, and she'd always be like, yay, mommy's back. You know, like I'd been on vacation or something, you know. Like, I hope I never forget, or I could never forget, is the look in her face where she just didn't care. You know, like, get drunk, get sober, whatever. Like, just go do it over there. Like, and by that point, you know, the only thing I paid for was the stuff I needed to get loaded. You know, if I ate it, if I drank it, if I wore it, I stole it. You know, I stole all your stuff because I like my stuff. And then I steal all, you know, and then I sell all my stuff, and then I sell my soul, and that's just how I run. You know, and I never wake up one day and think it's a good day to get sober. We talk a lot about acceptance in here. You know, I didn't like wake up and say like, I need to accept some help. What I actually accepted was that I was going to die this way and not as quickly as I wanted to. You know, and I ran out of the idea that it would ever get any better. It'd be nice if it didn't get worse, but it always did. You know, and I just thought I was going to live and die this way. And I started praying daily, other than for brain tumors, for God to save me or kill me. And God came in the form of the, you know, Hamilton Township Police Department. And I was arrested on a shoplifting charge. And I did what I do. I cried sober. You know, because really the only people in my life at that point, other than the people I was running around and running wild with, and they were few and far between even, the only people that were still in my life was a few AA people that had never given up on me. You know, and every, you know, a couple times a week, you guys would feed me, you know, and you'd make sure I thought I was being not selfish, that I would call you every once in a while to tell you I was still alive, you know, checking in. And you guys would feed me, and you'd take care of me, and you, you know, and sometimes you'd bail my car out of jail or me out of jail or what, you know, you'd love me. You know, and I love that. We say that there's so much stuff, and I try not to be judgmental and snarky, especially from the podium, but sometimes I can't help it. And one of the things that I hear in Alcoholics Anonymous a lot is people say, like, you loved me until I could love myself. And that sounds good. Like, it sounds good, like, on, you know, like a saying on a wall or in, like, a little Hallmark card or a fortune cookie or some crap. But, like, me thinking about me was never my problem. I didn't need you guys to love me until I could love me. What you guys did for me is you loved me when I was unlovable. You loved me when you shouldn't. You know, you loved me in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous when I was wreaking havoc in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I was coming late and leaving early and robbing your baskets and eating your cookies and coming for coffee and having you pay me at the, you know, buy me food at the diner and sleeping on your couches and just raising hell, you know, in the name of trying. And I thought I was trying, but I was so unlovable, and you guys loved me anyway. And from that, you taught me how to love, period. And so much of that is what this is about for me today. You know, and you can't put a price tag on that. Like, I can never repay Alcoholics Anonymous, but thank God we pay it forward instead of back. And so, you know, if I give back to AA every opportunity I have for the rest of my life, I can never balance that sheet. You know, how do you put a price on a life? And so what I do is I give the most of mine on any given day. But on that day, when I got locked up, I sent a text message to a friend of mine who I'd known for years in Alcoholics Anonymous. He's a great guy. He used to call me every payday and beg me to give him my paycheck. Because he had this idea, I know, isn't that funny? He had this idea in his mind that if I didn't have money, I couldn't get into trouble. You know, he wasn't quite a drunk like me, but he's in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he's a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But, you know, because for me, all that paycheck did was it gave me a cushion before I had to get slimy to get what I needed. You know, and you're not taking my cushion any more than you're taking my drink. And so when I get locked up that night, you know, for shoplifting, I I sent him a text message from the back of a police car, and it said, "Just got arrested. Don't know if I need bail money yet. I'll let you know." You know, and he's like, "Well, thank you." You know, and I did what I do, which is I cry sober. You know, because like when my butt's on fire, when life is on fire, and I'm out of all the other people that are willing to help me, when I can run the way I want to, I'll clean up for a minute so you'll help me, so AA will help me. You know, and I clean up quick, you know, usually. You know, it doesn't take, you feed me a couple times, give me a shower, brush my teeth, you know. I know how to talk your language. I've been here for 20 years. It's not that long of a book, you know. And you know, I can quote it page and verse, and it makes a great coaster, you know. And I'd be sitting out sometimes at bars and whatnot and saying, like, "Oh, my God, you've got to read this page. Like, you're all over this page," you know. So lack of knowledge, you know, has never been my problem. But just what I know is just enough to kill me. But so he comes in and he picks me up and off to the psych ward I go, because I graduated from rehabs to psych wards decades ago, and I like them better. The stay is shorter and the drugs are better. You know, it's a much better deal for a guy like me. You know, paper slippers in the med line is definitely, I'm a fan. You know, until like you come to the next day and you're like, "Oh heck, I was so dramatic." You know, but it doesn't work anymore because there's a lock on the outside of the door. You know, I hate that realization on like day two when you kind of level out and you're like stuck. You know, and you know, it's funny, for a long time, you know, and I'm not gonna, it's a whole, you know, whatever, but for a long time, like with health insurance and whatnot, like people would always say, "Well, you just have to tell that you go to the hospital and say you want to kill yourself. And you can go and they'll give you treatment." And it sounds great, right? You know, like it really does. It sounds like a really smart idea. Except if you're a guy like me and a drunk like me, they keep me. Because I present in all kinds of nutty ways, you know. And they're like, "Oh, yeah, honey, just have a seat. You're going to stay a while," you know. And so, like, I never tell anybody to do that. Because they might keep you. But, you know, so I get sober in spite of myself when I didn't mean to and I didn't want to. You know, I didn't pick this date. You know, I wind up in one more treatment and I lied my way into getting discharged homeless. And I was about to leave and I was, you know, I'd been, you know, confined for a couple of weeks now, and the idea, it suddenly occurred to me that I'd just lied myself homeless again, which I don't really mind if I'm already loaded, but stone cold sober walking out the door. It just suddenly occurred to me, call it a moment of clarity or a moment of grace, but it suddenly seemed to me like a really stupid idea. So I called a friend of mine in AA and I said, "Oh, guess what? I lied myself homeless," you know, and AA stepped in and they found me a couch, you know, and they found me an air mattress, and I had to go to court 2 weeks sober to try to keep my ex-husband and the state from keeping me from my kid. And the miracle isn't that I got to keep her, which is a miracle. But the miracle is that I was absolutely certain I was going to lose her. And AA gave me just enough faith in God to show up anyway. Because I was going to run. Because I'm a runner. I'm a runner when stuff's good. I'm definitely a runner when it's bad. Like, standing before a judge whose job it is to judge me when I've been judging me my whole life and let you take my kid instead of me giving her, like, that's a little too, you know. And I wasn't going to show up. I absolutely wasn't going to. And Alcoholics Anonymous surrounded me and convinced me that no matter what, with God, I could get through this. And that the trick is showing up. And I walked up to that courtroom, and it was like from here to the church away from me as I'm walking from where I parked. And there was like a crowd of people standing outside that I kind of recognized their silhouettes, and AA showed up for me. You know, and I got there, and you know, there was a half a dozen of you there that sat next to me, and I wound up not losing my daughter. And I looked to my friend sitting to my left, and I said, "Don't you ever again let me tell you that I don't believe that there's a God that cares about me personally." It's a great story, but I've forgotten that 8,000 times since over, you know. That's probably my biggest struggle, is remembering this, is God actually cares about me personally. But I don't ever have to look any further than my own experience to know that. You know, that it's not just where was God, you know, in three, or, you know, where was God in my 11th step, or where was God when I got sober. But, like, I can see God throughout my entire journey, you know, and it's not my purpose, so I don't know where I'm headed. But I certainly know under whose, you know, loving care guides me. So, but it wasn't always the case, you know, I spent a lot of time, you know, you guys told me back in 1990, whatever, that I better find a God, you know, so I just like I did when I'm looking for relief, I looked for God outside of myself everywhere. You know, I read your books, and if you know, and I went to your churches, and I tried to figure it out. Again, I tried to figure it out, and, you know, from God on a Harley to Sermon on the Mount to Never Alone, if you threw a book at me that said something God-ish about it, like, I'll read it, you know, because I'm trying to figure it out. And a good friend of mine in Alcoholics Anonymous, he said, Becky, you've been a liar your entire life. Instead of talking about an experience that you clearly haven't had and praying to a God that you clearly don't believe in, how about instead you take the rest of these actions? And I guarantee you at the end of it, you'll come to know God. And I didn't believe him, which is how I take all actions in Alcoholics Anonymous, in case you were wondering. I take them all with disbelief and to prove my sponsor wrong. I'm certain one of these days I will. But, you know, so that gave me permission to quit picking it apart and quit trying to figure it out. You know, so I said the darn prayer that I didn't believe in, you know, which basically just said I was, you know, making an agreement that if something happened to me, I'd be sure to give it away if I could. And I went through with the rest of these steps, you know, and I take this fourth step where, you know, I write out this stuff, and which, I mean, I was raised by outlaws. You don't put stuff in writing, you know, like, you just don't. Like, it was really weird for me, and I didn't like doing it, and it wasn't like all this truth sprung out at me, you know, or anything, because I'd been around here for long enough that, like, I was absolutely certain, you know, that, like, how many more times am I going to have to write about how my dad didn't love me, or my mom didn't this or that, you know, write about who you hate, okay. You know, I could do it in my sleep. But what happened for me this time is I sat down with this woman, and she took me through this, and we looked at it in five. And she was asking me questions that I'd never looked at before, you know, and she showed me how there's a difference between being reckless and fearless, you know, and how I've been reckless my entire life, but absolutely full of fear. And I realized how that fear made every decision I've ever made in my entire life, and it was absolutely driving my bus, and I was just along for the ride. And I also, you know, I came away from that also realizing that I'm not the victim I thought I was. You know, that I'm the cause and the root of every problem and every snafu and every scenario that I've ever put myself into. But the beautiful part about that for me is that one thing that was made clear to me when I got here this time is that victims don't get sober, but villains do. Because villains can make amends, you know, and that's been my story, you know, and that's been the case for me. So I can't blame my dad or my husband, who I'm absolutely sure it was all his fault, you know, or my upbringing or my this or my that or anything, you know, and I just... Like, people talk about leaving five feeling all, like, woohoo, floaty and full of whatever, you know, and the spirit of God and all that kind of stuff. Like, I just kind of felt dirty, slimy, and awful, you know. I absolutely, which is exactly how I should have felt, because I was a dirty, slimy, awful, horrible human being who did rotten, tragic, terrible things to everyone that had the unfortunate misfortune of loving me. You know, I don't have any really cool, sexy amend stories. Like, I didn't rob banks. You know, I robbed the people that love me the most. Because I'm, in addition to being a liar and a thief, I'm also a coward, you know, and I took advantage of every kindness and every loving act that you ever did for me, and I manipulated it and used it and sucked the life out of you. You know, I was like just this fun sucking, life sucking force in everyone that, you know, that I came in contact with. There's a line in the big book where it says, like, we are sure our way of life will have its benefits for all, you know, and I always used to think that meant that everyone on this planet needs a 12-step program, and I've got one, so, like, I'm better, and you guys should get one, too, you know, like the guy at Wawa or whatever, like, you'll benefit if you would do this, and then you'll step in line and behave like, you know, I do. But what I've come to know that actually means for me today is that we are sure our way of life has its benefits for all. When I am living this way of life, you benefit. Whether you are the guy at Wawa that I am no longer cutting off, or you were my children, or my employer, or my ex-husband, or whatever, fill in the blank. Everyone that I am fortunate enough to come into contact with today benefits because I'm doing this thing. Because I was an absolute, complete train wreck, terror, mean, awful, horrible human when I wasn't. You know, and you guys loved me anyway. So, you know, I go through the rest of these steps. You know, 6 and 7 mean absolutely nothing to me, except that I realized that, like, at some point or another, that if I could have fixed myself, I would have. You know, and that there's a lot of problems that are wrong with me other than alcohol. If there weren't, then detox would have fixed me. And I don't get to pick and choose, because I clearly have no idea what is good for me. So what am I going to ask God to get rid of? Instead, I give him all of me, to the best of my ability on any given day. God, please take it all and you figure it out. And sometimes he uses those defects of character to get me free. Because 99% of the time, the actions that I take in Alcoholics Anonymous are either because I'm afraid of dying or I'm afraid of pissing off my sponsor. Like, that's why I still do what I do, you know? Like, and I'm not, that, which doesn't, I don't make her mad, but what I'm just, I've had this idea in my head of that I need her approval. You know, like, I want you to like me. You know, and I hung out in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I surrounded myself this time with people that were doing stuff in AA. And for the first time in a really long time, I was surrounded by people that wanted to be around me. And it seemed like taking these actions was the price of admission. Not because they said it, just because it's what they were doing. So I got sober in the backseats of cars, driving people to and from meetings. I was, you know, I had a driver's license. A lot of the people I ran around with didn't drive. So I was the chauffeur, you know, and I got sober driving them to their commitments. You know, and I got sober talking about altruism and you know, this selfless movement and what does this mean? And what does God dependency mean? You know, like the 12th step, it doesn't say I'm suddenly able to manage my own life. You know, you can tell that I believe in the first step if I'm letting something else manage it. You know, and on any given day, I do that better than others. You know, and I go through these steps and I make these amends and I start trying to rebuild the stuff with my family. And I start, you know, trying to pay people back, both with their time and with my money. And I do the best I can on any given day to do all those things. And my phone isn't telling me what time it is. And I get sober in spite of myself. Because the one thing that I was absolutely certain when I got here is that I would get loaded again. Because I might not be that good yet at learning from your experience, but I'm pretty darn good at learning from my own. And the one thing that I'm absolutely certain of is that I will drink again, because that's what I do. And I spent a lot of time running around in Alcoholics Anonymous, taking actions I didn't believe in, waiting for results I didn't expect, with like the suicide idea in my back pocket kind of thing. You know, like, I'll do this and if it doesn't work, I'll kill myself. You know, and I'll do this and if it doesn't work, then I'll kill myself. You know, and I don't know what day I woke up and I didn't want to drink anymore. And I don't know what day I woke up and suicide didn't suddenly seem like a third choice. You know, it's funny, like it's not funny, but it's ironic, I guess. In We Agnostics, where it talks about, you know, it says like, you know, if you have this thing, if you're suffering from this malady, you know, you might be suffering something only a spiritual experience can conquer. And the reason that I know that I'm suffering from you know, an illness that only experience a spiritual experience can conquer is because I tried every other way. Like, if there was anything, we were talking about this on the way up, like, if there was anything in the world that would have gotten me sober other than God and AA, I would have found it in 1992. It wasn't for lack of trying. Like, I knew what you guys were about. I just didn't want to be about it. You know, you guys telling me that God was going to save me was the equivalent of you telling me, like, aliens or Santa Claus was going to come down. Like, I just didn't buy in. And it's hard to be all in when you're not. You know, and I can't be okay when I'm not all in. I absolutely can't. I've tried 8 million ways to Sunday. You know, and this would be like the thing I did for an hour. You know, or like I'd pat my kids on the head and go to a meeting and then go home and live my life. Like, AA was the way that I spent an hour of my day, maybe, if I was sober that week. You know, And for me, the main thing that has changed for me is I've completely and totally immersed myself in this program and in this fellowship and in you people. You know, I don't know about you, but I still suck at balance. It's kind of like a word that sounds too much like management and control for me. Like, I'm no good at it. I don't know how to do it. When I start getting my hands in it, it just gets all mucky. But the one thing that I do know is that I keep Alcoholics Anonymous as the point of my arrow. And everything else slices in behind it. And it lands exactly the way that it's supposed to. It's funny. This actually is kind of funny. But in October, I was asked to give a talk. You guys schedule so far in advance. I was asked to give a talk on the 10th step. And I'm like, wow, that's an hour on a lot of talking. But, you know, I kind of was like a little apprehensive about it when I said yes, even though I didn't want to. And my fiance said, don't worry, honey. I'm sure you have, you know, it's not until October. You have time to start admitting you're wrong by then. You know, so maybe I'll do that, you know. If not, it's a funny story. I can add 30 seconds to it, you know, because it's not my strong suit, you know, it's not. And the idea that always gets in my way on any given day is that I feel like I should be better than this. I feel like I should be doing better than this. I feel like I shouldn't be tripping over the same stone. And I feel like me telling you is just silly and bothering you. You know, I don't want to call my sponsor and say I want to stab him again, you know, because we talked last week about how stabbing is bad, you know, and so I kind of get hung up on that, you know, and I get hung up on this idea of I ought to be better than this, and I'm infinitely better than I used to be, but I feel like I should be infinitely better, and so I become not only my own worst critic, but again, I'm my own worst enemy, because when I'm doing these daily disciplines and I'm doing this thing, actually doing this thing, everyone benefits, you know, and it doesn't take long when I'm not for everyone again to suffer, you know, but it's never my first thought, you know, it's not, like, I don't say, like, oh, God, this is bad, go to God, you know, but it's more like, oh, look, she drug herself across the ground for 30 feet, better go to God, you know, and the wonderful thing that I have found in Alcoholics Anonymous that is, thank God, is that not only does God not need my permission to be real, he also doesn't need my permission to work in my life. You know, and that has been the case that in spite of me, in spite of some, you know, in spite of sometimes my own best thinking, you know, I know God is there. And I try to stay in contact with that, and I try to remember where I am on that arrow, you know, and it's AA and God way ahead of any idea that I have. But, like, I've talked a lot, and I'll kind of come full circle with this, that sponsorship saves my life on a daily basis. And not even, for a while, it saved my life on a daily basis because I was running around chasing new people and saving them because, like, I thought I had to. And it works when all activities fail. And I'm like a chicken with her head cut off, and I can't stand to be still. And so, like, I'll go help you. And the only time I felt comfortable in my own skin is when my pain was helping you, you know, and that kind of thing. But what kind of shifted from what happened for me this time was that, like, I'd suffered for so long here, for so long. And I start running around with these people, and I meet this woman, and I start following her lead and taking her direction and doing what she does. And all that stuff happened for me. Like, I didn't want to kill myself anymore. I didn't want to drink. I got my family back. I got this stuff. My life starts getting better. And she's magic. Like, I'm absolutely certain this woman is magic because she has been able to do what I could not do and what other people couldn't do because she did it. I'm absolutely certain she did it. Like, it was, I finally got the magic beans. Like, I got the sponsor, you know, like, it's, and she talks my language, and she met me where I am, and look, like, I've got a life, and I'm full of love, and I love you all, and she's awesome. And she starts making me want to sponsor people, and I told you that whole thing about being afraid of killing them, which was true, but also, like, I'm not magic. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not magic, and this woman is magic, and she saved me, and she said, Becky, just share what you know, just go, you know, and so I did, you know, and it's like, hi, I'm Becky, you know, and I, you know, nice weather, and then I'm out of ideas, you know, and I never know what to say after the weather, you know, and especially in AA, when I'm talking to new people, it used to be really hard for me, because innately I hate asking the questions that I hated being asked, you know, like how much time you got, you know, because I always lie about that when I'm tomorrow, put it in pen tomorrow, like I'm going to be sober tomorrow. You can write that one down, you know, and, you know, just there's so many questions that when you're not honest in Alcoholics Anonymous, you hate when people ask you. So I'm suddenly uncomfortable to be the asker, you know, so I'm just, it's awkward and it's awful. But this thing happens, I'm afraid of, you know, her not liking me, so I continue, and I finally get this woman, and she wakes up in AA. You know, we sit down, we read a book, we pray when it says pray, we write when it says write. I tell her about my life, she tells me about hers, I tell her how I get today to day, I talked about God, we do all the things that we do here. And she gets better. And I used to think that was the God part, but the God part was probably that I cared anyway. And here's the thing. I know I'm not magic. I know I still, on any given day, can't balance my checkbook, and the best I can hope for is to not stab someone sometimes, you know? Like, how you feeling today? Stabby. Like, I didn't feel stabby today. It's a good day. So, like, I know that. So this woman gets better sitting next to me, doing what I did and what I tell her I did, and all of a sudden, God is real. Period. Sponsorship made God real for me. And until I did this thing, until I came all, like, I heard someone decades ago tell me in a group just like this that you haven't experienced everything Alcoholics Anonymous has to offer until you've been on both sides of the fifth step. And at that time, because I hadn't been, I rolled my eyes and said, what do you know about that? You know, but you haven't experienced everything this program has to offer if you haven't had the opportunity to be on the other side of a table from someone. Because that's where, for me, God came alive. God absolutely became as real as John sitting in front of me. Hi, honey. When I had the opportunity to help another woman. And it's not like all of a sudden I'm farting butterflies and I can't wait to get out of bed at 3 in the morning when people call and I'm all excited. Like, that's not it at all. But that's where God shows up for me, and that's where God is real, and that's where everything else gets into the right... That's where priorities happen again, and where everything falls back into the place, and where I get settled and I remember what we're really doing here and what's really important. And I can't put a price tag on that. And Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a life, and it gave me a purpose. Because before I got here, not only was I hopeless and helpless and broken and a slob and all that stuff that we talk about, but I was useless. I was useless to my family. I was useless to my friends. I was useless to everybody who had the misfortune of coming into contact with me. And today I have a purpose, and my life has meaning. And because of the meaning and the love that I have found on both the giving and receiving in an Alcoholics Anonymous, I've learned and now can show up that way for my family. And I can show up that way for the people that love me and that I've, you know, stomped on my entire life. So you guys made me a human, and I will be eternally grateful for that. Thank you.